1931, returned to his father's after 90 summers, an example of love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
Imprisoned journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal remembering South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who visited him in 2007 when he was still on death row. And that does it for our show. We continue our year-end conversations with National Book Award-winning poet Martina Spada on Wednesday, Noam Chomsky on Thursday, and on Friday we'll look back at 25 years of Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Berkey and Augusta Messiah Rhodes. Remember, wearing a mask is an act of love. I'm Amy Goodman.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kbu.fm.
The Portland area is facing winter weather conditions and expected to last between December 25th and January 3rd. Multnomah County has declared a state of emergency and is opening emergency winter shelters. Members of the public can take online training and then volunteer for shifts at one of the 5 warming centers in different parts of Portland. Please look out for your houseless neighbors and help spread the word about the warming shelters, which will open December 25th at 3 p.m. and remain open 24 hours a day during the severe weather. More information and links to sign up to volunteer at warming centers, as well as flyers to print out, can be found at the website multco.us/cold. That's multco.us/cold.
KBOO has a mobile app. You can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KBOO podcasts, even set KBOO as your alarm clock. Just look for KBOO on the iTunes and Google Play Store. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. The Omicron COVID-19 variant spreads in Oregon at unprecedented speed. The CDC reduces quarantine period under corporate pressure. And 35 civilians are massacred by Myanmar armed forces. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, December 28th, 2021. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kbu.fm/give. I'm Yasmin Kovanoglu. Portland is experiencing severe winter weather, and it's important to stay safe. With more information, here's KBOO's Josh Salem.
Significant snowfall and freezing temperatures caused at least 2 cities in western states to open emergency shelters. Starting Saturday, Seattle opened 6 shelters, expected to stay accessible at least through Wednesday. Seattle had received at least 6 inches of snowfall as of Monday, while Port Angeles, just across the Sound, was covered in more than 1 foot of snow. Portland Metro and Multnomah County opened 5 winter weather shelters on Christmas Day and 1 later in the weekend. They are located at Reynolds High School, the Salvation Army Center on North Williams, the Portland Building, the Mount Scott and East Portland Community Centers, and at 120 Southeast Market Street. All are open 24 hours daily. Washington and Clackamas counties open their own warming centers, though they may have more restricted hours. Severe weather shelters do not require identification for use, and pets are welcome. They do require masks and can supply them for guests who do not have one of their own. Weather shelters are also distributing survival kits containing tents, sleeping bags, and warm clothing. TriMet is offering free rides for anyone traveling to a shelter. Riders or anyone seeking more information should call 211. Portland Commissioner Dan Ryan has called for more volunteers to staff the shelters, and he personally volunteered at the Portland Building on Monday morning. In related news, low temperatures and the weekend snowfall led to icy conditions for Monday and Tuesday morning commuters, especially in Washington County. Beaverton saw multiple cars slide off the road, and was the site of at least one multi-vehicle crash. All eastbound lanes of I-84 shut down on Monday due to a jackknife semi, and many bus lines were canceled on Monday and Tuesday. The Portland Bureau of Transportation closed at least three roads Tuesday morning because of ice, all in hilly areas. Weather reports call for very cold temperatures into Wednesday. A weather front expected Thursday should lead to sleet and freezing rain, changing to simple rain by Thursday night or Friday. Reports coming out midday Tuesday say that New Year's Eve is expected to be dry. State and local agencies do advise checking tripcheck.com before driving. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
COVID-19 cases are up 25% in Oregon as the state copes with a global surge in the Omicron variant. That's slower than the 61% national increase, but Oregonians are still feeling the heat. Test availability is down and hospitalizations are up. Data so far indicates that Omicron is less deadly than the Delta variant, but its extreme infectivity has made it the dominant strain in the country in just a few weeks. Omicron is also more vaccine resistant than previous strains. Infectious disease experts recommend taking extra precautions, as booster shots and cloth masks alone aren't a surefire guarantee for safety. The Omicron variant has also increased the rate of child hospitalizations by 35%. According to the chief of Connecticut Children's Medical Center, the variant is affecting kids in a way not seen before. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have reduced the COVID-19 quarantine period for those who test positive from 10 to 5 days. CDC spokespeople say transmission is highest within the first 5 days of developing symptoms. Dr. Anthony Fauci has said he approves of the new guidelines. However, members of a major flight attendants union attribute the new federal guidelines to heavy lobbying by airline companies. They say the new guidelines are identical to those pushed by the lobbying group Airlines for America. Union President Sarah Nelson said that while, quote, the CDC gave a medical explanation about why the agency decided to reduce the quarantine, the fact that it aligns with the number of days pushed by corporate America is less than reassuring, end quote. Thousands of flights have been canceled in the past several days as flight crews contract COVID while the Omicron variant surges during holiday travel. President Biden, along with the nation's governors, discussed the Omicron surge. A Wisconsin election probe faces legal challenges, and activists push for new protections at New Mexico's Chaco Culture National Historical Park. With more on these stories, it's Jonah Chester with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
My message to the governor is simple. If you need something, say something. We're going to have your back in any way we can.
As the Omicron variant continues to surge across the country, President Joe Biden met with the nation's governors Monday to discuss ongoing response efforts. The White House last week laid out a new plan to tackle the variant, which includes distributing a half billion at-home tests and deploying up to 1,000 troops to support overburdened hospitals. Republican Governor Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas urged the president to defer to states on future public health initiatives.
As you look towards federal solutions that will help alleviate the challenge, make sure that we do not let federal solutions stand in the way of state solutions.
A Republican-led review into Wisconsin's November presidential election is pushing forward. Investigators subpoenaed five Wisconsin mayors and Megan Wolf, the state's top election official, earlier this year to provide records and testimony behind closed doors. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call sued on behalf of Wolf to block her subpoena, arguing it's unenforceable under state and federal law. But in a court hearing last Thursday, Attorney James Bopp argued investigators have the full authority of the legislature.
The legislature has plenary authority to make sure that these people administer the law properly.
The judge said she'll issue a decision next month. The Biden administration has eliminated Medicaid work requirements in Georgia. The New York Times reports Georgia was the last state to have a federal waiver allowing the restrictions. In a nearly 80-page letter, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services said the pandemic and the Omicron surge in particular made the work requirements, quote, infeasible under the current circumstances, unquote. A group of environmental activists is pushing the president to expand protections for Chaco Culture National Historical Park in New Mexico, which includes sacred sites for some Native American tribes. The administration last month took temporary steps to preserve the lands around the park from oil and gas drilling and refining. Max Trujillo, New Mexico senior field coordinator for the group Hispanics Enjoying Camping, Hunting, and the Outdoors, wants the administration to make those temporary protections permanent.
Activism has grown to protect the community, and we've seen indigenous Native American activism become such a resilient force, not only in the community, but across the country and across the world.
More than 1,000 U.S. flights were canceled Monday, the latest in a wave of holiday travel disruptions caused by the Omicron variant. Approximately 3,500 flights into or out of the nation were delayed. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The deadline to make a donation to charity and claim a temporary pandemic-era deduction is this Friday, whether or not you itemize. That's why nonprofits are hoping donors will take advantage. Here's Suzanne Potter with more on the story.
There's still time to give to charity and claim a deduction on your taxes, whether or not you itemize, but that temporary pandemic-era deduction expires on Friday, the last day of 2021. The charitable deduction allows a single person to claim a $300 donation or $600 per couple without the hassle of itemizing. Liz Moore with the Montana Nonprofit Association says now's the time to give.
$300 goes a long way for little community nonprofits and allowing them to serve and have less reliance on government.
Montana is home to about 7,200 charitable nonprofits that help the community in a multitude of ways, addressing issues such as homelessness or hunger, and by supporting things like after-school programs, affordable health care, the environment, the arts, and more. Overall, charitable giving is up over the past few years, mainly due to the generosity of mega donors, but small donations are down. A study from Indiana University, released in July, found that fewer than half of Americans donated to charity in 2018, down from two-thirds in 2000. Moore says the numbers fell after tax reform in 2017 doubled the standard deduction, which may have helped consumers, but hurt nonprofits that rely on small donations.
So 90% of all filers can use the standard deduction. That means people are going to give less because they don't need it to get that deduction.
Donors are advised to make sure they keep the receipt so they have proof of the gift when they file taxes next spring. For Big Sky Connection, this is Suzanne Potter.
The State Department is considering a new visa category that would allow student refugees to apply for permanent residency once they complete a degree at an American school. With more on the story, it's Suzanne Potter.
By next fall, refugee students may be able to apply to attend American colleges and universities. The State Department says it plans to pilot a new category for refugee admissions called a P4. P4 status would allow a group or institution to sponsor a refugee, and a university sponsorship program would allow that person to study in the U.S. and then apply for permanent residency. Laura Wagner is with the Initiative on U.S. Education Pathways for Refugee Students, part of the President's Alliance on Higher Education and Immigration. Wagner says the current foreign student visa program requires students to leave after they graduate.
Right now, we are getting the best and the brightest of the world, and then we're saying, thanks, now you have to go back to your home country, whereas this would provide an opportunity for them to stay and continue to use and share those talents with their new community in the U.S.
The Alliance recently published a report calling on the State Department to implement a P4 category this spring. Community colleges and universities would step up to offer free tuition. Philanthropic groups would cover other costs, and the State Department would aid in resettlement. Wagner says refugees deserve a shot at a brighter future in the U.S., a country founded by immigrants.
Less than 1% of refugees worldwide are able to be resettled. We have only 5% of refugees accessing higher ed.
Advocates of the pilot program say it could initially be limited to 30 students who would apply next fall and start their college classes in 2024. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
According to a recent report, New York ranks last in the nation for racial residential segregation and for housing stock with risk of lead contamination. both of which are social determinants of health. With more on the story, it's Emily Scott.
A new report provides a checkup on the health of people in New York and across the country to help officials improve outcomes in their states. One takeaway from the United Health Foundation is that affordable housing is connected to New Yorkers' public health. The research found the pandemic has contributed to an uptick in deaths nationwide between 2019 and 2020, and New York leads with a 29% increase. Rebecca Sannon with the Health and Welfare Council of Long Island says the lack of affordable housing on Long Island led to people spreading the virus more quickly in crowded homes.
We had lots and lots of folks leaving hospitals, going back home and being told to quarantine for 10 days, who shared one bathroom with three families, where that was an absolute impossibility just from a structural perspective of their lives. And so it benefits everybody when there are affordable options for folks.
The report ranks New York 50th or last in the nation for racial residential segregation, as well as for percent of housing stock with lead contamination risk. On a positive note, New York got high ratings for access to clinical care, with more than 300 primary care providers per 100,000 people. The isolation of the pandemic has had an outsized impact on mental health, with the number of New Yorkers reporting mental distress increasing by 8% between 2019 and 2020. Dr. Ravi Johar of United Healthcare says it's important for people to recognize and seek help for their mental health concerns.
Being able to have a support system, talking to friends, and finding a way to be socially active really, really makes a big difference in your mental well-being. And we know that mental well-being has a tremendous effect on physical well-being, too.
The report ranks New York 9th in the nation for overall health outcomes, including low rates of premature death and obesity. The state has also seen a large increase in the number of young people who received all doses of the human papillomavirus, or HPV, vaccine. I'm Emily Scott with New York News Connection.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned for Making Contact at 5:30. Tonight's weather will be cold with some snowfall, and snow tomorrow will give way to freezing rain. Today in history, in 1885, the Indian National Congress was founded. The Big Tent Party led the drive for the independence of India and largely governed the country until 2014. The quote of the day is from American actor Denzel Washington, who was born today in 1954. Washington said, quote, "If you pray for rain, you've got to deal with the mud, too." Myanmar security forces killed 35 people on Christmas Eve, including women and children fleeing fighting. This is the latest massacre perpetrated by the military since February's coup and the jailing of controversial leader and Nobel Peace Prize laureate Aung San Suu Kyi. Militias across Myanmar have taken up arms since the coup. Two foreigners killed in the attack belong to the international humanitarian group Save the Children. A nearby office belonging to Save the Children was also shelled recently by government forces as they razed buildings in a fight with rebels. The military junta running the government has a history of random executions and notoriously used live ammunition to quell peaceful protests. Memorial International is a Russian human rights organization that started documenting Soviet human rights abuses in the 1980s. After more than 30 years in existence, the Russian government has shut it down for portraying the USSR as a, quote, terrorist state. The move comes as the Russian government ramps up attacks on freedom of expression, political assembly, and LGBTQ rights. Memorial International gained fame uncovering the extent of Stalin's purges and deaths in the Soviet Union's Gulag system. It's not unusual for the Russian state to label perceived opposition as foreign interference, but the decision on Memorial International was unexpected. The ruling came from Russia's Supreme Court. Russian President Vladimir Putin has accused Memorial International of supporting terrorist organizations, but he also recently called the nonprofit one of Russia's most reputable NGOs. The United Nations Special Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders said, quote, "Just as its creation marked the beginning of openness in Russia, Memorial's closing might mark its end," end quote. Extreme weather events defined 2021 in the Pacific Northwest. As climate change progresses, extreme heat waves and blizzards have become a fact of life. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
2021 has been a year of extreme weather events. Among the worst and most unforgettable was an extreme heat wave. In the Northwest, including British Columbia, a weather pattern known as a heat dome may have caused 1,400 deaths from the excessive warmth. Allie Bean with the Idaho Conservation League says scientists would typically expect an event like this to happen in the region once every 1,000 years.
But climate scientists, after looking into the event and doing some modeling, recognized that this type of extreme heat event is 150 times more likely due to climate change.
Bean says there were other extreme events as well, such as a rise in toxic algae blooms. She also notes that extreme weather has effects on economic drivers like salmon, which came back to Idaho in extremely low numbers this year. Idaho has been experiencing one of its most severe droughts in history, which has impacted parts of the economy such as agriculture. Bean says the region is supposed to get more precipitation this winter from a weather pattern known as La Nina.
If we don't get significantly higher snowpack from this La Nina, the drought from last year will continue for multiple years just because of that soil moisture dryness.
Wildfires once again raged in Idaho and across the West this year too. But Bean says these events may have a silver lining.
The really poor air quality index for such a sustained period of time and the huge number of wildfires really brought attention to what we need to do to adapt for and take care of the health of those that are most vulnerable.
Bean says the state needs to decrease its carbon pollution, including through greater electrification of its transportation system. She also notes the need for changes to the agriculture sector, which is the largest emitter of greenhouse gases in Idaho.
Finding ways that we can work with farmers and ranchers and dairies to decrease methane emissions is really huge. Also finding ways within the agricultural sector that we can sequester carbon and remove it from the atmosphere will be helpful.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Running a commercial leaf blower for 1 hour can emit as much smog-forming pollution as driving a car 1,000 miles. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. California residents who hate the noisy drone of lawnmowers are in luck. In October, Governor Newsom signed a bill aimed at phasing out the sale of gas-powered lawn equipment by 2024. The engines in lawnmowers are small, but they release carbon pollution. And many gas-powered tools also emit other air pollutants that harm people's health. The California Air Resources Board estimates that running a commercial leaf blower for 1 hour can emit as much smog-forming pollution as driving a car more than 1,000 miles. Dan Mabe is with the American Green Zone Alliance. He spent years informing homeowners and landscapers about the benefits of electric lawn equipment.
Some are not health related or noise related at all. It's just simply convenience of not having to deal with the gas, the tune-ups. It's just more simple and more convenient to use.
He says many people are already going electric, and he hopes the new law provides an opportunity to get more people in California and beyond aware of the benefits and excited to make the switch.
I think that it could be a transformative change.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
There's more pipeline trouble in Wisconsin today as a proposed pipeline reroute threatens tribal land. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Wisconsin tribes are raising concerns about the proposed reroute of the Enbridge Line 5 oil pipeline. Tribes are concerned the state is not providing a clear picture of how the project will impact surrounding tribal territories and waters, and say tribal rights are not being properly taken into account. Jonah Chester reports.
The Red Cliff Band's territory is just north of the proposed Line 5 reroute. Noah Saperstein with the Red Cliff Environmental Department says the draft environmental impact statement is too flawed to serve as the foundation for future impact statements.
Should all of these concerns be addressed and included into the next environmental impact statement, it'd be a document that looks so drastically different than what was released for public review that it would be something that would warrant another public comment period.
The Red Cliff Band has passed a resolution calling for the removal of Line 5 from tribal territories. Environmental Director Linda Nguyen says preserving tribal lands begins with honoring tribal treaty rights.
Red Cliff remains committed to protecting Nibe, which is water, and Aki, which is land, you know, an air of our current and ancestral homelands for our people and the generations to come.
Line 5 currently carries oil through Michigan and Wisconsin, crossing about a dozen miles of the Bad River Reservation in the Northwoods. The Department of Natural Resources says it will consider all public input before issuing a new environmental impact statement for the project. Enbridge says keeping the nearly 70-year-old pipeline up and running is critical to the company's operations in the U.S. and southern Canada. Wisconsinites can weigh in by email or attend a public hearing on the proposal on February 2nd. I'm Jonah Chester.
This week, we're taking a look at some top stories and newsmakers of 2021. In March, Indigenous people across the country celebrated the confirmation of Deb Haaland as Secretary of the Interior.
What an important and historic time. Just overjoyed and just really, really hopeful.
That was Charlene Upbuck's reaction. She's with the group Native Movement. Haaland, Laguna, and Jemez Pueblo made history becoming the first Native American cabinet secretary. She's also one of the first Native American women to serve in Congress, where she was a strong advocate for Indigenous and environmental issues. During her confirmation process, key Republican senators opposed Haaland's nomination due to fossil fuels. Indigenous grassroots groups across the country made calls, wrote letters, and used social media urging for her confirmation, including Native Movement.
I know that our base did a lot of communications and really sent in those letters and expressed our support.
After being sworn in on her first day as Secretary of the Interior, Haaland promised to reach out to tribes to fully involve them in decisions and work on Indian Country issues. Haaland made those comments during a briefing with a group of reporters, members of the Native American Journalists Association, which included National Native News. Native journalists were given first access to Haaland. She's been instrumental in White House events, including the Tribal Nations Summit with President Biden. Haaland has met with tribal leaders in person and during virtual events. Recently, Haaland vowed to continue to include Indigenous voices in decision-making during her address to the Alaska Federation of Natives virtual convention.
Interior is centering Indigenous voices in all of our work. We are strong. We are still here. We have traditional knowledge and contributions to make to this country. We will be consulting on important policy topics in the months to come. I see it as my job to uplift your voice.
Some of Haaland's initiatives for Indian Country in 2021, the creation of a missing and murdered unit to pursue justice for American Indian and Alaska Native people, the launch of an investigation into U.S. Indian boarding schools, and the formation of the Secretary's Tribal Advisory Committee for direct engagement with tribal leaders. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem. The producer is Ethan Sandweiss, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Jonah Chester, Anthony Lizowitz, Suzanne Potter, and Emily Scott. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 8, It's Wednesday Talk Radio. Join host Paul Roland for a look at the new Netflix film, Don't Look Up, and a year of climate disasters. At 9, it's Radio Zine, featuring a variety of intriguing public affairs programming. Then at 10, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO's currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact.
Making contact.
I'm Monica Lopez. This week on Making Contact. September 11th, 2021 marks the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on the United States. In today's program, we turn our attention not to the tragedy of 9/11 itself, but to 9/11 as an inflection point in U.S. culture and policy in two areas: surveillance and homeland security, and the government and public regard of the use of torture in the war on terror. On this 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on the United States, Making Contact is speaking with leading thinkers and asking what 9/11's legacy has been in these areas. But first, we go to Making Contact producer Salima Hamarani. Using the backdrop of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, the Department of Homeland Security began funding huge surveillance networks all over the country. They shared information between local and federal intelligence agencies, and they supposedly tracked information to prevent the next big attack on American soil. Or did they? Salima Hamarani brings us this story from Maine.
A lot of the surveillance infrastructure created after 9/11